Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Permanent Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio on October the 20th, 2008 on the West Coast, or October 21st in the Eastern and Central time zones, as well as points east of there across the Atlantic and into Europe and Asia. There are, in some places, they're already into the afternoon. So I want to welcome everybody who is listening in tonight. A lot of things I want to discuss. Don't have a guest tonight. I may take some calls later on if you're got an itchy finger and you're wanting to share something that may have happened to you over the weekend or your perception of things going on in terms of the political campaigns or how time is being sort of compressed and sped up. How you may be feeling your DNA is changing, or anything else that you'd like to talk about. There are millions and billions of topics, and we'll tackle every one of them on this show. That said, I did initially have a guest, but she had to bow out, which sometimes happens, and sometimes it enables me to go in a different direction and address a lot of issues that people are bringing to my attention. So I'm going to, in the first part of the show, sort of do a recap of some things that happened over the weekend and then address a flood of email I got, seems like within an hour or half an hour of showtime tonight. And they're all valid points. There is a lot of fear-mongering going on around the internet and on the mainstream media, of course, and so some of that I'm going to address. I will make a couple of points because there's an article that went to press today at the Idaho Observer, and that's part four of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. Even those of you who have been to my website, directlightproductions.com, probably know that that article has been up there for about a month, and we just determined that when we put out part three, it was important to put out part four at the same time. Now, there are some issues in actually the whole of the Three Stooges Go to Washington, and I feel very strongly that they're important, it is important to bring these issues up. Why, you may wonder, am I beating a dead horse into the ground, or is it because I feel that there's not enough attention being paid to the truth? Now, there are several authors who have written some things about Barack Obama or John McCain, and the truth has come out, and yet, because the mainstream media is being used as the main propaganda tool, and that's television, radio, and newspapers, and other types of print media, pretty much across the board. I still hear the same misstatements, and actually from both of these gentlemen, if I dare call them that, Barack Obama, the 20 years that I went to the Trinity Church in Chicago, the church where the controversial Reverend Wright is or was teaching, and where Obama left in May of this year. He keeps making this statement: the church I went to for 20 years. The media says, the church where Barack Obama attended 20 years. 20 years, this was his religious home. Well, he began going to the church, folks, in 1992, according to his own claims, according to books he's written, according to his published autobiography or biographies on various websites. in print media, in his television ads. He's been going to this church for 20 years, although he began in 1992. Now, you do the math. 2002 is 10 years. Here we are in 2008, and he quit in May. So it's like 15 years, maybe 15 and a half years, 16 maximum, not 20 years. There's a big difference. There's a big difference being a 20-year-old girl having sex with a man and a 16-year-old girl in some states, which is considered statutory rape. So the age has everything to do with the age of that girl, how long she's been on the planet. How long Barack Obama has been going to a church is important when you're fitting together timelines, because by all means and by all the facts that I've uncovered, none of the facts line up chronologically about his life. Now, it so happens that Sean Hannity did a story, and a couple of people alerted me to the fact that on Hannity's America on Fox News last night, that he may be using some of my research. No one from Fox contacted me and asked me how I felt about that or asked my opinion on anything. That's not how the mainstream operates anyway. They do not want to draw attention to someone who is not in the mainstream. And especially if they're printing the truth. They will not address the truth because that draws attention to the truth and they don't want people to see the truth. They want you to feel, they want you to believe that they're putting the truth out. I've said this a million times, but it's becoming more and more evident. Now, they had this last debate and all of a sudden Fox goes on the attack against Barack Obama. Now, I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. It's what they do anyway. They do this, it's their modus operandi. Okay. Now, when Sean Hannity did this story, he picked out some key issues, and he's talking about abortion, and he's talking about the Muslim ties, but he's not really going into the nitty-gritty of the Muslim ties. They talk about the school. They mention one guy who influenced Obama in Hawaii when he was a kid. But they don't talk about the fact that he roomed with Muslims from Pakistan when he was at Occidental College in Los Angeles. They don't talk about who he hung out with and how many times he had been to Africa before he admitted going to Africa. There's a difference when you write in a book, I went to Africa, didn't get to meet my brother, my stepbrother, David, because he died in 1987. Before I went to Africa for the first time. But now we know that he was in Africa in 1985, and he may have even been in Africa in 1981. Or even before that. He could have been in Africa many, many times. Some people are speculating he was born in Africa. I still say he was born in Indonesia. I say it because his name is an Indonesian name. It's not an African name. This is a fiction, folks. This is a big fiction. And you've got a birth certificate also in Indonesia. So I'm 50% right. Philip Berg says there's one in Kenya. There's also one in Vancouver, British Columbia. The only place we can't find a real birth certificate is Hawaii, where he claims to have been born. Lie after lie after lie after lie. Now, I'll hand it to Sean Hannity for doing the story. But did they talk about the child sacrifice that I found? No, they did not mention that. They talked about his stance on abortion, that he feels abortion is fine. But they didn't take it the extra mile and talk about a child sacrifice. You tell me, folks, who is Renee Abena Obama? Born on the 31st of October, which is All Hallows Eve, otherwise known as Halloween, 2004, died December 25th, 2004, lived 56 days. Numerologically, that works out to an 11. 5 and 6 is 11. The date that the baby died. December 25th happens to be Christmas and happens to be Barack Obama's so-called grandfather on the Dunham, or great-grandfather on the Dunham side of the family. His birthday, 110 years prior. And if you do the numerology on the number 110, you get another 11. You could break the number down even further to a 2, but they stop at 11. So 110 years is another 11. So you have an 11, the beginning, and 11, the end. And the end was also a beginning for the great-grandfather. That was his birth date. So there's double meaning in there. Then you have another 11 the next day. We had a tsunami. In where? Was it in Kenya? No. Was it in Hawaii? No. Or Vancouver? No. It was in Indonesia. And that number, they claim 146,000. They rounded the number off, but let's add the numbers. 1 and 4 is 5, and 6 is 11. We have 3 elevens. 3 elevens actually makes 33, as in 33rd degree Mason. Someone directed me last night to go look at a video of a Bible code about Obama being assassinated, and I've never seen such an asinine video in my life. This guy was he could pull out a football score from Sunday night or Saturday afternoon college football. He could pull out a score and turn that into something about Bobby Kennedy or Barack Obama. It was insane. I'm using discernment here, and I'm talking about what these people do, because I didn't put this together except that I found some documentation. Now, what was my documentation? Well, I found a record in World Vital Reports. I found another record, again, on the Internet, but worldvitalrecords.com has a listing for Renee L. Abena Obama. Now, what's interesting, L happens to be Madeline Payne's middle name, Lee. That L is used in many of the aliases. Renee L. Abena Obama. Birth date, 31 October 2004. Death date, 25 December 2004. Issuing state, Maryland. This is a Social Security number, 215-71-0752. And it says, description, the death master file, or the DMF, from the Social Security Administration, SSA, contains over 80 million records of deaths that have been reported to SSA. This file includes the following information. I've got to expand my margin here. Pardon me a second. Oh, wouldn't you know they would do this here. Okay, on each decedent, if the data are available to the SSA, Social Security number, name, date of birth, date of death, state or country of residence prior to March 1988, zip code of last residence, and zip code of lump sum payment. The SSA does not have a death record for all persons, therefore SSA does not guarantee the veracity of the file. Thus, the absence of a particular person is not proof this person is alive. We're talking about the death index, so you would presume that everybody in that is dead. So I don't even understand why they wrote that, but nonetheless, the Social Security Administration, in their death index, also lists Renee Obama. Renee L. Abena Obama. Birth, 31st October 2004. Death, 25 December 2004. There's a P underneath that, and it says P equals proof. Death certificate observed. Question is, by whom? Now, there's, on the Social Security document, there's a 72 underneath last residence. Actually, the code 72 means that this death was reported by a funeral home. Interesting. It's not reported by a hospital. It's not like this baby was sick. I would think the hospital would report a death if the baby. In fact, there's no listing of a parent, but they sure gave the baby a name. They named it Obama. They named it Obama. Same social security number, 215-71-0752, issued in the state of Maryland. So a baby that lived 56 days actually had a social security number. When I was a kid, when you started working, you had to do that. Well, then you're going to find this baby was working all right in a moment here. FamilySearch.org has individual record, Renee Abena Obama. They leave out the initial L. Birth date, 31 October 2004. Death date, 25 December 2004. Social Security number, again, 215-71-0752. State or territory where number was issued, Maryland. Okay, interesting. So we have three independent reports that Renee Abena Obama lived and died a total of 56 days in Maryland, which happens to be the same state Barack Obama has some properties in, under some aliases. Those are in my article in the Idaho Observer and on my website, directlightproductions.com. In the Three Stooges, Go to Washington, both parts 3 and 4 talk about money laundering and property acquisitions under aliases. The whole family's doing it. This is the aspect of this guy running for president that they should be talking about on the mainstream media. But they don't talk about it. So since I discovered it, I feel it's appropriate I talk about it. Now, you want to talk about who should be president here? We'll deal with McCain in a minute, but we'll stick to Obama. Now, under the name of Renee Obama, this is interesting because my article discloses some aliases for Barack Obama. These are his real estate money laundering aliases. And we know he was involved in money laundering with Tony Rezko in Chicago, so let's not pretend like he's squeaky clean. He's a money launderer. Okay? And that's been reported in the Chicago Times. It was in this report last night by Sean Hannity. Hannity even used all the pictures I used in my article. Now, whether he got the idea from me, I don't know. But and I heard two aspects of my research that he mentioned. And I also heard that Sean Hannity read my article. So I'm wondering why he read my article and doesn't feel it's appropriate to mention what I'm talking about on Evident Footprints tonight. Of course, we all know the answer to that, but we've already discussed this. Okay. There's another listing for Renee Abena Obama, but it's an alias. This baby lived 56 days, and Renee got an alias. And I'm going to explain the alias to you. It's Renee Bama, no O in the front. Just Renee, R-E-N-E-E, and Bama, B-A-M-A. Now, if you try to find a phone number or an address for Renee Bama, you're not going to find one. Other than this condominium. This condominium is at Kings Point, Tamarack, Florida. The address, 10591 East Claremont Circle, number 111. 111, isn't that interesting? We have three ones in that. Very interesting. Renee Bama. In parentheses next to her name, Life Estate. Renee Bama, Life Estate. Now, I pointed out that Renee L. Abena Obama, by all indications, appeared to be a child sacrifice, an Illuminati child sacrifice of a baby born on Halloween day and died on December 25th. The same year, 56 days later. Now we have Renee Bama, Life Estate, in parentheses, then two other names, Linda B. Hatuka. Now, this Linda B. Hatuka is kind of an interesting name because she shows up in a lot of the other real estate acquisitions. And we have a new alias for Barack Obama. He used David Ejoa Obama, and he used Paul N. Bama with no O in it. And he used Brian Bama in this piece of real estate, this transaction. He's Brian Bama. Well, Brian stands for Barack. So Renee Bama gave her life, got a social security number. They set up a life estate for a child that lived to be 56 days old. And gave Barack Obama an apartment, a condominium in Florida. That's a newsworthy story, folks. If you ask me, here's a guy that says abortion's okay. You know, I don't want to get into that argument. I think my listening audience knows how I feel about life and how I feel about death. I think the issue here is not abortion. The issue is there's a murder that took place, and someone should be investigating a murder. And I just gave you a whole list of clues as to who might be behind the murder on live internet radio. This is not the first time I've talked about this, but it's in the article too. And it's funny. It's funny that the mainstream media, I know, has read this article. Okay. Thousands of people have read this article. Why don't they have the guts to report the truth? Because they're compromised? This is about somebody wanting to lead our country. You know, you should be outraged that, and you gotta trust me, I found this like anybody else could go looking for it. I just happened to be the one to do it and to put it into an article and to communicate it to the American people, in the hope that somebody will wake up and see what's going on. That's basically all it is. Now, you wonder, with somebody that feels that way about the country and that way about life in general, what's going to happen to us? We have these slip-ups about being a Muslim. I proved that his mother went to a Muslim school. His mother, Dorothy from Kansas. Actually, her name, they say, is Stanley Ann, because her father wanted to have a boy. He gave a girl a boy's name. Most fathers would try to make a boy. Nope. He had to give her a boy's name. There's so much mind control and brainwashing behind this whole Barack Obama story. Okay, now, I'm going to digress for a moment, but it's going to make a lot of sense in a moment. You know, one of the schools that Obama went to after he went to Occidental, well, this is really interesting, too. He went to all these prestigious schools. Nobody can find transcripts at any of these places. Even Columbia, the professors there say, oh, well, I moved in his thesis. Really wasn't a thesis. It was a paper that was just sort of like a report. You know, it's just got an excuse for everything on this guy. The Columbia University stint that he supposedly had 2 years there prepared him for jobs working on an international basis, working on committees with other young people in New York. Then they sent him to Chicago, but this issue about Columbia is important, and I got an email from a friend that is concerned about a story that's out about A Course in Miracles. And actually, this is a very valid question. This is a valid concern. Many years ago, I received a copy of the whole collection of the books. And when you read it, there's a lot of well-meaning type of statements in there. But basically, the exercises in the book begin like mind control. In fact, that's really the only thing you can call it. It's like mind control. The book was written by Dr. Helen Schuchman, who was a professor at Columbia University, where Barack Obama went to school. And she worked for another professor there, or she worked under the professor, Dr. William Thetford. And that career started in 1958. Now, she didn't really get along with Thetford that well. And unbeknownst to her, Thetford worked for the CIA and was working on Project Bluebird. The Project Bluebird ended up, we can say, moving or being assimilated into the MK Ultra project. This was basically mind control and the use, any type of mind control, using electroshock therapy or torture, drugs, and compartmentalization of the mind through pain and trauma. So that, and often this starts with children. This isn't just something that they start doing with an adult. These people are picked out. Often it's because of their bloodline. It may have something to do with their parents. There was already this connection with Thetford being part of the CIA and doing research on altering, let's say, brain functions, inducing mind control or brainwashing or just studying whatever it was that they wanted to incorporate into the program with the MK Ultra project. So, Schuchman actually throughout her career, she was doing studying and that with, and whatever projects that Thetford would bring her way, but she didn't really get along with him very well. Then one night when she's coming, returning home from the school, she took the subway. She had this experience of a bright light in the subway and it was like a spiritual revelation, and she began writing this book called A Course in Miracles. And she's taking dictation from a spirit entity identifying itself as Jesus. Now, why would Jesus give you mind control exercises? This chair doesn't mean anything. That window doesn't mean anything. The floor doesn't mean anything. The television doesn't mean anything. None of the things in this room mean anything. These are some of the exercises that are in the book. I'm just being brief, describing one of them. It's a far cry from what Jesus taught 2,000 years ago. And why would he come? Why would he not just teach spiritual truth? So from the get-go, this book is already out in left field, the exercise book for the student. And there's a teacher's manual, and there's sort of a text description that's used. So you have, it's like a testing type of manual. So the MK Ultra mind control program and A Course in Miracles actually were in the hands of two people that worked together at Columbia University. So you wonder how and you wonder why Barack Obama went to Columbia University. What was it that he chose that school? Or did someone else choose that school for him? And who paid for it? How did he afford going to those schools? The Punahou School in Hawaii, from fifth grade through high school, then Occidental College in Los Angeles, then Columbia University in New York. then he's working on these committees, and he goes to Harvard? Harvard Law School? Where did he get the money for that? No one seems to really want to pay attention to that. Well, we're going to talk about that some more after we take a short break. And I want to encourage the listening audience to call in. Use the numbers at Station 2 to make it easy on Seth. You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. My name is Don Nikoloff, and I'll be right back. So don't go away.
I'm having all the fun in the world.
Larry's not with us anymore. He went on, you know.
Yeah.
He bit the big one. Well, he's got his own little piece of heaven.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
The Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in...
Welcome back to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Now, we were talking about this issue about this child sacrifice that I discovered while I was doing research on the aliases for Barack Obama. So we have a murder committed in 2004 in the state of Maryland, by all appearances. The dates themselves describe a satanic act. This was a ritual sacrifice, and we have a piece of real estate tied to the baby in the state of Florida. That's pretty convincing kind of evidence. And yet this is ignored. This is not considered to be something worth talking about. I hear the spin about Phil Berg's lawsuit, the lawyer from Philadelphia, and rightfully he's saying Barack Obama has not produced a valid birth certificate. My goodness, when you're trying to get a driver's license, you got to have a valid birth certificate, and this guy is going to run a country, and it's out of the question to ask him to produce one? Come on, folks. And everybody says, well, what can I do? What can I do? We have talked about this, and we're going to talk about this some more tonight. We have talked about your responsibility to say something, to do something, to let somebody know. Well, I'm just one person. No one ever said you were two or three. We're all just one person. But if you don't do anything as one person and I don't do anything as one person, who's going to do something? Somewhere people have to start taking action. And it's speaking up about this. Now, I hear the argument. You know, John McCain produced his birth certificate. His parents were Americans. He didn't have a problem producing a birth certificate. Folks, I did the genealogy on John McCain, and the overwhelming evidence is that his father and his grandfather likely were brothers, not even father and son, and bastard sons of the King of England. I did the genealogy on that and the research. And you have a person who disappears, and at the same moment he disappears, another guy appears. One letter in the name changed. And there's no history. In fact, the claim that McCain was born in a hospital that didn't exist is enough right there to disqualify him. Why is it so difficult to get through this through everybody's thick skull? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. The evidence is there. No one has challenged this evidence. They went after Larry Sinclair. No one has challenged this evidence. It's because it's true. They don't want to draw attention to the truth. It's up to you and me to bring this out. This is why I'm talking about it. Fox did a story. They talked about abortion. The guy voted for abortion every single opportunity he had. And does it surprise you now, since with that voting record, does it surprise you that I found a child sacrifice in there? Something he attached his name to. That is, if his name is Obama, we're assuming that's Obama. How many Obamas are there? How many Obamas are living in Maryland? The guy is a senator from the state of Illinois. He's got houses in Silver Spring, Hyattsville. I've got a whole list of houses. He's got them all up and down the East Coast. He's got them in Chicago. He's got them in California and Hawaii, too. He's got them all over the place. It just blows my mind. So when the media now sticks up for John McCain and says, well, John McCain didn't have any problem producing his birth certificate. He did it right away. I'm telling you, folks, he could have gotten a birth certificate a long time ago, but there's no way the guy can be born in a hospital that did not exist. We had the same issue with Samuel Prescott Bush when I did the genealogy on the Bush family in 1863. He couldn't have been born in a town that didn't exist, and he wasn't born in a church 15 years before the church was built. So it's more the same crap, just a different color, different aroma. These people just do the same thing over and over, and it's pointed out to you what they're doing, and still, it doesn't sink in. It's like, duh, yeah, I read the article, duh, what am I supposed to do? Duh, what do we do? And then I watch Sean Hannity for an hour talk about what he wanted to talk about. It's easy to point fingers at these people and say, well, you know, they're radicals. What is a radical? Really, a radical is anybody that refuses to do something that everybody else is telling them to do. That's really what a radical is. They want you to be a good little worker bee, a good little ant, a soldier ant, and do your little, move your little kernel across the ground. Take it down into the little passageway, the little tunnel. Feed the queen, feed the royalty. This is how the planet has been set up for us, and we have a responsibility. So I could go on and on and on and on talking about mind control and MK Ultra and Columbia University, but this is the environment in which Barack Obama was trained. You wonder why the guy looks and sounds like he's mind controlled? It's because he is. Why does he lie? Because he has no idea what the truth is, or if he does, he doesn't want anybody to know it. So again, that's why you have the lies. McCain's lying about who he is. He was not born in a hospital that did not exist. Look up Executive Order 8981. Please do that, folks. Just Google Executive Order 8981. I'm telling you exactly what the document is. Google that and go and read what President Franklin Delano Roosevelt instructed the Navy engineers to do on December 17th, 1941. That's more than 5 years after John McCain was supposedly born in the hospital at Cocos Solo Naval Base. There was no hospital in 1936. There was no hospital in 1937. There was no hospital in 1938. There was no hospital in 1939. There was no hospital in 1940. There was no hospital in 1941. There was no hospital in 1942. And there wasn't a hospital until 1943. So John McCain was not born at the Naval Hospital at the Cocos Solo Naval Base in Panama Canal Zone. He is also not in the National Archived Certificates of Live Birth for 1936. His name is not in there either. And that's because he was not born there. It's simple. It's not rocket science. His family was inserted into our Navy, into our country by the King of England, by all rights. Shouldn't be able to run. I don't care what they say, because the proof is that they were secreted into the country. Just like Barack Obama has not proven he's an American. Now, the story about McCain submitted a birth certificate, they could have made that up years ago. George Bush faked his birth certificate. We know that. The Scherf family is known to have worked directly with Adolf Hitler and Otto Skorzeny and Joseph Mengele and Martin Bormann and Reinhard Gehlen. That's proven by a photograph, again, in an article on my website and at the Idaho Observer. We have such short memories. I can't believe that there are still people that don't know this, that can't accept this. And they're counting on that. They're counting on people being stupid, having the memory of a squirrel. Actually, a squirrel's pretty good because they can bury nuts and acorns all over your yard and know exactly where they put them. We got people that can't remember where they put their car keys from 1 minute to the next. So, and I'm not trying to put down the listening audience. I'm just saying, these are the issues. Who these people are or who they are not has everything to do with what's going on. You wonder why you're listening to lies and none of what you're seeing makes any sense? It makes no more sense than why these people are allowed to run. You should be outraged by this. But we talked about mind control, didn't we? We talked about MK Ultra, Project Blue Beam, A Course in Miracles, Columbia University. Now, when Dr. Helen Schuchman, the woman that's credited with channeling the information, which was in A Course in Miracles, by the way, she dictated this information to William Thetford, who she didn't get along with. The people in the mind control programs talk about how they're attacked. They're attacked with a technology. They hear thoughts in their head. You see, it's a matter of frequency, folks. You can get put on a certain frequency and you'll hear things. I talked to someone who told me that because Sarah Palin is in their town this evening, they got harp on. Harp, and they can hear harp. There are people that can hear it. And they're doing that to subdue people. They just have to do everything they can to dumb down the populace. Keep the sheeple in the pen. So why am I talking about all these things? Well, I guess it's just it's disgusting to see what's going on and still nobody's waking up. Or very few are waking up. I guess it's encouraging when someone says, well, what can we do? When they're to that point, they're waking up. But they're far behind because we've been talking about what we can do for several years now. And so it's kind of late to get there. Here's an interesting letter someone sent me. This is addressed to actually all of us. It says, to all law enforcement and military personnel and others concerned. I have read all of the emails from not only some of the MTOA board members, but from other law enforcement and military personnel about Barack Obama's rudeness and what seems to be disgust for basically anyone in uniform. Well, it's my turn to add to the list of emailers, and here it is. So, members of the Calhoun County Sheriff's Department, Michigan State Police, me included, and other local agencies inside Calhoun County are working with Secret Service for the security of Mr. Obama. Mr. Obama's bus arrives and pulls into the stadium area. Before Mr. Obama exits the bus, he has the Secret Service get off and tell all the law enforcement personnel in uniform that they now have to stand behind the bus so Mr. Obama is not seen with anyone in a law enforcement uniform before he gets off, or while in the public view. So everyone from the Michigan State Police, the sheriff's departments, and other agencies look at each other for a brief second and go stand behind the bus out of sight so Mr. Obama does not have to see or be seen with what to him are undesirables. He refuses to be seen with or even acknowledge military or law enforcement personnel in uniform, and he wants to be our commander-in-chief. At a time of war and terrorism in our world, this presidential candidate, who is being protected by various branches of the military and law enforcement at the taxpayer's expense, refuses to acknowledge, be seen with, or allow in his photograph background any type of military or law enforcement in uniform. But this is not in the headlines or in the news or on TV. The TV news doesn't show us marching around behind the bus. In the future, look and see if you can see a single soldier or police officer in uniform when you see Obama. Why? I wonder what the story or media frenzy would be if it was Muslims, blacks, whites, Jews, or any other race, gender, religion, and or occupation that Mr. Obama refused to be seen with or have around him. Why would I make this up? Everyone in law enforcement knows we have traditionally had more funding under Democrats. Just food for thought leading up to November 4th. Jason Kern, Executive Board Member, Tactical Police Officers Association. Now, I thought that was a pretty interesting letter because we had something a couple of months ago when Obama went to Afghanistan, and the soldiers there had lined up especially to honor him, to greet him, and he walked by them as if they didn't exist. He basically snubbed the military that's there giving up their lives. This for a homosexual, crack-smoking presidential candidate, according to Larry Sinclair. And it is any wonder that the character of this guy now, you can attach him to Tony Resco, Antoine Resco, a Syrian-born real estate developer, money launderer, convicted 16 times, convicted on 16 counts, we'll say, of money laundering, and with whom Obama got his house, although Obama attributes it to book sales. Let's see the receipts of the book sales. That would be worthwhile at the time he bought the house. Because what they show is that the money was borrowed. Now, even Hannity, in his story last night, didn't mention that the money, actually, there was $3.5 million, actually $3.6 million, that Resco borrowed from another guy in Syria. That money was brought over to the United States, and they bought these properties. And Obama sold one of the properties to Resco and then bought back a portion of the property, making his property larger. That's how they do the money laundering. And it goes on all over the country. This is not the first deal that Obama's been involved in. And they don't talk about this. They won't come after me because I'm telling the truth. They don't want to draw attention to the truth. They'll go after Larry Sinclair because he did prison time. The difference between him and Obama is Larry Sinclair got caught. Obama had parking tickets. I haven't heard anybody in the media talk about this other than the Somerville News up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I talked to the senior editor there several weeks ago about this. And Obama had $140 worth of parking tickets that stood, according to the media, it was 17 years, when in actuality it was almost 20 years. See, it's the reverse of the church story. When they want to look good, it's the longer period of years. When they don't want to look bad, it's the shorter period of years. But more lies. I listened to Barack Obama in the last 2 days at least 100 times say, 40 years ago when I was 8. 40 years ago was 1960 when he was 8. Okay? You would have to say 48 years ago. 8 plus 40 years is 1960. Obama was born in 1961. Why does he keep saying 40 years? Remember, the number is important. Maybe they don't want you to think it's important, but if it's the difference of a 16-year-old girl or a 15-year-old girl and somebody's going to go to jail for statutory rape, that number, that age matters a whole lot. 1 year matters. What about drinking, the legal age for drinking, or in some states, the legal age for driving? 1 year makes all the difference in the world. What about going to prison? You go to prison for 1 year, that's a long time. These people are so loose and lax with the figures, and nobody's paying attention. Again, the church that he supposedly attended, we have to wait until the year 2012, before he's been going there for 20 years. And he quit there in May. They say May 31st of 2008. So you have to take 4 years or 4.5 years off. 15.5, 16 years at the most. Can't even be 16 years, though. He started in 92. It's these types of facts, folks, that you should be looking at who these people are. Not is he going to be a good president. Not is he's inexperienced. That doesn't mean anything. He's not an American. That's what the law is. And it's the same with McCain. You should be outraged. They're not Americans. They were in the army. They were in the military. But it's funny that McCain did 38 broadcasts for Radio Hanoi and crashed 5 jet airplanes and caused hundreds of deaths on the USS Forrestal. And they covered that up. The military covered that up. Why? Because they didn't want it coming out that the guy's not even an American. Doesn't it hit you a bit unusual that both of these guys have these associations with people who are not Americans, but they're being called Americans? You should be furious. You should be asking the question, who's pulling their strings? Who's the puppet master here? Let's find that out. Let's get to the bottom of it and find it out. Let's find out why a guy running for president got off with the murder of a baby that lived for 56 days. Let's look at that. And look at the guy that claims he was born in Coco Solo, Panama, which already disqualifies him from running. Because they were leasing the land there, and his parents are not Americans. And he wasn't born in a hospital that didn't exist. So he should have to prove where he was born, and he should have to prove where his parents are from. Not the spin, because the history and the research are in dispute. And this issue is before us now. We have fresh research, which is showing that all the history we have been taught is a lie. How are we going to deal with that? Are we going to just allow that to happen, or are we going to do something about it? Now, I could go on and on and on and on with this. Hopefully, I'm making the point here. We're about to end the hour, and there is something else that I want to cover because it's very, very pertinent to what I'm talking about tonight, and it's in conjunction with the topics that I covered last week, especially the one on Friday with scientist inventor Jim Murray. We talked about responsibility, and we talked about individuality and the nature of where responsibility comes, the true nature of man. And where our responsibility comes in to play. A lot of people don't want anything to do with responsibility. And my feeling there is just get out of the way, stay out of the way. Don't complicate things for the rest of us. There are people that are doing everything in their power to guide the consciousness of our country and this planet on a positive path. On a creative path. And you create something new. You don't try to redo all the old. It's failed. It's failing now. Last week, it's been over a week ago. I came out and predicted that the next bank to go down was going to be New York Bank of Mellon, and sure enough, last Wednesday or Thursday night, I heard a brief snippet on the radio in a car. I heard this, that New York Bank of Mellon was being bought by the federal government for $3 billion. and you watch, there are going to be other banks going through the same thing because they've damaged this beyond repair. There's no fixing it. They have to abandon the whole system. We are in a position, if we thought carefully, we're in a position to just do away with this insanity and create something else. They're not capable of doing it, because if they could, they would have. The only thing they can comprehend is oppressing people and murdering people and silencing those that reveal the truth. You're listening to Evident Footprints, and we're going to take just a short pause here, and we'll be right back. So don't go away. Welcome back to Evident Footprints. If you're just joining us, I've been talking about the candidates in a very general way. I still feel very strongly that who these people are has everything to do with whether or not they are legally able to run for the presidency of the United States. That is a big issue. That is a huge issue, and the fact that the media is just spinning everything, and I'm telling you how they're doing it. It's not real. It's not rocket science what they're doing. They're lying about everything. They're flat out lying. They're quoting figures. They're quoting dates. They're quoting events that can occur. You've got everybody related. I mean, pretty soon, I'm waiting for them to say Barack Obama's related to Walter Cronkite and Captain Kangaroo. It's got to come pretty soon, because they're running out of people who he's related to. It's just beyond comprehension. And everyone that's watching this seems to think that this is okay. I was listening to a show. I was getting an archive posted up to my website, an interview I did back in June with Dr. Tony Petrinovich, who is very intuitive herself, very wise lady. And we were talking about brainwashing. And I sort of made a smart aleck kind of comment that, wow, these people don't even know they're brainwashed. And she said, well, that's the point behind brainwashing. Of course, I understand that, but I was just alluding to the fact that there are so many people brainwashed, no one even considers the fact that people are brainwashed. It's just taken for granted that that's just the norm. That's how everything is just fine and the world is moving along. It's turning at a roughly 1,000 miles an hour, and after it's moved 24,000 miles, we have another day. And no one's really thinking about the processes that are going on and how you're being affected, how you're either devolving, or if you're lucky enough to be evolving, you're moving to a higher place. I see us just going down downward. And I could, I said this last week. I'm not going to go into it in the depth that I did last week. I got a lot of email from people saying, don't give up. You know, we really enjoy what you're bringing out. There's a lot of heavy information that you're sharing with us. We enjoy hearing the truth. But you got to do something with it too, folks. You can't just listen to it. You have to take some kind of action. And I know there are people taking action. I hear these people calling into the radio shows. I see them sending things in the email, alerting people to things that are going on. Most people, though, by and large, just don't have the time. They just want someone else to solve their problems for them. They don't even want to acknowledge they have problems. But if they find out, as long as someone's willing to do it for them, heck, why not? You know? They can focus on their favorite sport or their game. Go play poker or go bowling. Until that moment comes when they might have to concern themselves about where they're going to get their next meal from. And I'm not going to feel sorry for these people. These people will have created the situation that's going to put them finally into a position of responsibility. They're going to have to take responsibility for what's happened in their life. And it's the way it is. We're going to take just a short break here. Just a very short break. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Don't go away.
Anymore. He went on, you know.
Yeah.
He bit the big one. Well, he's got his own little piece of head.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints. Gotta laugh once in a while. Okay, I'm shifting gears here. That's why we did that little transition there. Had Seth worried for a moment. I think he thought I was losing it or something. I want to bring your attention to something now. I'm wondering how many out there in the listening audience are familiar with a gentleman by the name of Claude Frédéric Bastiat. He's a French sort of a free trade activist, and he was an author of Petition of the Candlemakers and some other satires. And he lived from 1801 to 1850, so roughly 49 years. In Barack Obama's terms, we could say 60 years. anyway, he's written some really interesting pieces, and I thought it would be appropriate to talk about some of the things that he talked about back then, because they apply to what's going on today. And I'm not really going to go into the preface material, which is just alluding to the fact that this work was sort of translated and revived for these times. Actually, it's been out for a couple of years, but I think you'll find it interesting. This was originally translated by the Foundation for Economic Education, and I have permission without any special request, so we're encouraged to talk about this. Bastiat says, in a section called The Law, he says, "The law perverted, and the police powers of the state perverted along with it. The law, I say, not only turned from its proper purpose, but made to follow an entirely contrary purpose. The law became the weapon of every kind of greed. Instead of checking crime, the law itself, guilty of the evils it is supposed to punish." You've heard me make some, let's say, comments along those lines from time to time, that these people who are making the laws are breaking the very laws they're creating and then expecting us to follow. He goes on to say, "If this is true, it is a serious fact, and moral duty requires me to call the attention of my fellow citizens to it. Life is a gift from God. We hold from God the gift which includes all others." Now, folks, keep this in mind. Those of you that listened to last Friday's show with Jim Murray, it was a two-hour show, and we talked about these very things, and I've had this piece of work in my possession for some time. Went back to review it after that show that we did on Friday night, and it was really interesting that basically somewhere around 150, 160 years prior, this man was talking about exactly the same thing. "We hold from God the gift which includes all others. This gift is life, physical, intellectual, and moral life. But life cannot maintain itself alone. The Creator of life has entrusted us with the responsibility of preserving, developing, and perfecting it. In order that we may accomplish this, He has provided us with a collection of marvelous faculties. And He has put us in the midst of a variety of natural resources. By the application of our faculties to these natural resources, we convert them into products and use them. This process is necessary in order that life may run its appointed course." Now, keep in mind that Bastiat is talking about life in the 1800s. So they were just getting into this physical thing, and they're not talking so much about the spiritual as we are today. In those days, they talked about spiritual things primarily on Sunday, maybe occasionally on a Saturday, but usually once a week. And that was when they went to some organized religious function. Now, since he is talking about this in the context of the reality of that time, let's just honor it in that sense and see where that takes us. Life, faculties, production, in other words, individuality, liberty, property, this is man. And in spite of the cunning of artful political leaders, these three gifts from God precede all human legislation and are superior to it. Well, he says liberty. I would, they translated that from the French word liberté, which actually means freedom. So The word liberty in English is a softer word than liberté. La liberté means freedom. Freedom is a perpetual condition, and it's not conditional. Liberty is temporary, and it is very conditional. In fact, it's temporary according to time and rank and the reason behind the liberty. Liberty is a permission. Freedom is God-given. It's a sovereign right. So I point that out in the context of how this was translated. I'm sure he said, la liberté. And so he said, the freedom. Again, life, faculties, production. In other words, individuality. This was a topic that we spoke about on Friday. The fact that you and I as individuals are indivisible. Yet the use of the word individual means I'm separate from everyone else, when in the reality is we're indivisible, so we're all one. You can't have two meanings for the word, and the one we have been giving is erroneous. The one that is used constantly is separating me from the whole, when in reality, individual means indivisible. I cannot be chopped up into pieces, nor can I be separated from God. Yet this system, this is the issue here, the system separates us from God. You have Barack Obama asking to be protected by the police and the military, and he's separating themselves from the men who are expected to watch him and whom he disrespects. So that said, now, this is man, he says. And in spite of the cunning of artful political leaders, what does that mean? Artful. Okay, they're creative. They're spinning stories. They're making things appear to be something that they're not. These three gifts from God precede all human legislation and are superior to it. So, individuality, freedom, and property, or the right to own property, and that doesn't just mean real estate. That can mean anything. The clothes on your back, a horse, a carriage, an automobile, a truck, an airplane, your toys, whatever that is. Property can be a family, it can be a livestock, it can be a business, it can be whatever you do to exist on this planet. You have a right to have that, and it has a right before the law is created by man. That's what this Frenchman is saying. He died in 1850, so this was said well over 150 years ago. Life, liberty, or life, freedom, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, freedom, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. And he asked the question, what is law? What then is law? It is the collective organization of the individual right to lawful defense. Each of us has a natural right from God to defend his person, his freedom, and his property. These are the three basic requirements of life, and the preservation of any one of them is completely dependent upon the preservation of the other two. So I suppose property would include food as well. For what are our faculties but the extension of our individuality? And so, now, if that is true, you cannot separate what you own from who you are, which is also indivisible. So it's part of you. What you own, who you are, and what you do is all part of your individuality, your completeness, your indivisibility, the inability to divide you up or chop you into pieces for legal reasons. And he goes on to say, what is property but an extension of our faculties? What are your faculties? Your sight, your hearing, your speech, your sense of taste, sense of smell, and your spiritual discernment. Why do they keep that out of the five senses? Actually, we have six senses. And they kept that out of the science books for all those years. They didn't tell us about it. And it's like, it's taboo. Don't talk about that. We only have five. Sense of touch. Well, you're not allowed to touch anything without having a law about it. And I'm not implying you do. I'm just saying it's like you have five senses, and one of them you're not allowed to talk about, and the other five have laws that apply to them, how you use them and when it's appropriate to use them. He goes on to say, this is Bastiat again, if every person has the right to defend, even by force, his person, his freedom, and his property, then it follows that a group of men have the right to organize and support a common force to protect these rights constantly. Isn't that what our Constitution is based on? Remember, this is a Frenchman saying this. Before our Civil War, he's saying this. Thus, the principle of collective right, its reason for existing, its lawfulness, is based on individual right. And the common force that protects this collective right cannot logically have any other purpose or any other mission than that for which it acts as a substitute. Thus, since an individual cannot lawfully use force against the person, freedom, or property of another individual, then the common force, for the same reason, cannot lawfully be used to destroy the person, freedom, or property of individuals or groups. What are they doing right now? What is this fascist cabal that's running our country doing? Stealing money, going after everybody that's exposing the fact that they're stealing the money. They're murdering people. Anyone that goes after and reports the fact that they're murdering people has to go through the same kind of treatment. This is an old document. This is someone who is seeing how it has been in their own time. Is it any different today? What we're going through? We have all kinds of technology, but what this man is talking about, is it any different? That's from the horse and buggy days. And yet the basic issues are still the same basic issues we have. These are God's laws he's talking about. And he's saying that the three most simple criteria for allowing a human to function as a human are given by God. And that there are no laws that a man can create on this planet that should have more importance than those three basic laws. Again, I'm going to repeat something here. If every person has the right to defend, even by force, his person, his freedom, and his property, then it follows that a group of men have the right to organize and support a common force to protect these rights constantly. Thus, the principle of collective right, its reason for existing, its lawfulness, is based on individual right. And the common force that protects this collective right cannot logically have any other purpose or any other mission than that for which it acts as a substitute. Thus, since an individual cannot lawfully use force against the person, freedom, or property of another individual, then the common force, for the same reason, cannot be lawfully used to destroy the person, freedom, or property of individuals or groups. Why is that so difficult for us to accept that? That's really what our Constitution says. too, or as well. Those are the rights, and those are just three rights that he's speaking of there. But we have that individually. Remember I said, and Jim Murray talked about this on Friday, and on other shows we've talked about this, that we have a personal responsibility or an individual responsibility as children of God with these gifts that he's describing right here. And we've also described these gifts before. This is not the first time you're hearing this. There is your power within being a whole person. An individual is not someone chopped up and fragmented into little pieces. Only if you see yourself that way, because you're believing what they tell you. This is a much higher form of consciousness, and yet it's very simple. Now, he goes on. This again is Bastiat saying, such a perversion of force would be, in both cases, contrary to our premise. Force has been given to us to defend our own individual rights. Who will dare to say that force has been given to us to destroy the equal rights of our brothers? Since no individual acting separately can lawfully use force to destroy the rights of others, does it not logically follow that the same principle also applies to the common force that is nothing more than the organized combination of the individual forces? If this is true, then nothing can be more evident than this. The law is the organization of the natural right of lawful defense. It is the substitution of a common force for individual forces. And this common force is to do only what the individual forces have a natural and lawful right to do, to protect persons, freedoms, and properties, to maintain the right of each, and to cause justice to reign over us all. So simply said, so well put, and yet it's the very problem that we have today. All of this, really, what we're going through here in the United States is 100% in the opposite direction to what I just read. And that's because of corruption. Now, we'll go on. I'm making a comment. Let's go on. And am I boring you? I hope not. This is pretty compelling stuff to consider that this was written before 1850. A just and enduring government. If a nation were founded on this basis, it seems to me that order would prevail among the people in thought as well as indeed. It seems to me that such a nation would have the most simple, easy to accept, economical, limited, non-oppressive, just and enduring government imaginable, whatever its political form might be. Under such an administration, everyone would understand that he possessed all the privileges as well as the responsibilities of his existence. No one would have any argument with government, provided that his person was respected, his labor was free, and the fruits of his labor were protected against all unjust attack. Isn't that what we're going through today, is an unjust attack? When successful, we would have to thank the state for our success, and conversely, when unsuccessful, we would no more think of blaming the state for our misfortune than would the farmers blame the state because of hail or frost. Well, now, in the days of HAARP and chemtrail spraying and Al Gore's global warming theories, anything is possible. The state would be felt only by the invaluable blessings of safety provided by this concept of government. Now, that has the tone of the 1800s in it. And as I just pointed out, that hail and frost can be produced. They know how to manipulate the weather. They've known that for a long time, too. It can be further stated that thanks to the non-intervention of the state in private affairs, what is he talking about there? Our wants and their satisfactions would develop themselves in a logical manner. We would not see poor families seeking literary instruction before they have bread. We would not see cities populated at the expense of rural districts, nor rural districts at the expense of cities. We would not see the great displacements of capital, labor, and population that are caused by legislative decisions. The sources of our existence are made uncertain and precarious by these state-created displacements. And furthermore, these acts burden the government with increased responsibilities. Again, we have the same problem today that he's talking about here. The complete perversion of the law. Now, in light of what's going on today, listen very closely to this. But unfortunately, law by no means confines itself to its proper functions. And when it has exceeded its proper functions, it has not done so merely in some inconsequential and debatable matters. The law has gone further than this. It has acted in direct opposition to its own purpose. What does that mean? Law is supposed to bring about justice, it's to guarantee justice. And so if what he says is true, then what he's saying is the law is delivering injustice. So we should be thinking along that line while we're listening to this. Okay, so I'm going back into this now. The law has been used to destroy its own objective. It has been applied to annihilating the justice that it was supposed to maintain. He's saying the same thing I just said. To limiting and destroying rights which its real purpose was to respect. The law has placed the collective force at the disposal of the unscrupulous who wish, without risk, to exploit the person, freedom, and property of others. It has been converted plunder into a right in order to protect plunder, and it has converted lawful defense into a crime in order to punish lawful defense. What does that sound like? The law has placed the collective force at the disposal of the unscrupulous who wish, without risk, to exploit the person, freedom, and property of others. It has converted plunder into a right in order to protect plunder. That sounds like real estate bailout. That sounds like bank bailout. That sounds like stock brokerage firm bailout. That sounds like the government stealing the money from the people, taxing us, legally taxing us, holding us responsible for their plunder, their corruption. I've been saying this for 2 weeks, ever since this bailout crap came out. I've been saying this, that this bailout stuff, under the threat of martial law, they got the Congress to turn that vote around in 5 minutes. It was voted down. You get a Senate that passes it. Nancy Pelosi is smiling like the Cheshire Cat, like she just saved her rear end. And she was so full of glee because she knew somehow she was going to get her hands on some of that money. And we're supposed to just be dumb idiots watching this script play out while they legally set us up to rob more money. Basically, what they're telling the world is, look how stupid our people are. We just passed laws, a bunch of laws now. We're going to take $1 trillion. And when they went for $700 billion, I told this listening audience, well, mark my words, they're going to go for $1 trillion. And they did. They went for $850 billion on the second go around and then just added a couple of days later. 2 days later, they added another $150 billion. and nobody said anything. Nobody is outraged. And one of the people is a guy, or two of the people are not even Americans, Barack Obama and John McCain. I mean, if they're not Americans and they can't legally run for the presidency, what are they doing in the Senate? Why doesn't that register in anyone's head? Why am I the only one asking that question on the whole planet? And you know I'm right. And this is not ego talking. I'm just looking at what's going on. I'm observing it. John McCain didn't have the right even to be in the military. He was snuck in as a spy. You see, this is how the Illuminati work. They get their bloodline snuck into the country. And they get a bunch of people blackmailed and extorted to the point where all they can do is be corrupt. That's what we're reading about here. That's why I'm bringing this up again, because we're talking about plunder. He's talking about Bastiat's talking about plunder. You know, in the old days, they talked about plunder. Plunder was the stuff that pirates got when they raided ships. And this is piracy. Again, I'm repeat the last two sentences in this paragraph. It has, and he's talking about the law, it has converted plunder into a right in order to protect plunder. So this is the bailout. And it has converted lawful defense into a crime in order to punish lawful defense. We're talking about posse comitatus there. Charging you with a crime, you haven't committed a crime, discharging you with one, throwing you in jail. The law has been perverted by the influence of two entirely different causes, stupid greed and false philanthropy. Let us speak of the first. A fatal tendency of mankind is what this section is called. Self-preservation and self-development are common aspirations among all people, and if everyone enjoyed the unrestricted use of his or her faculties and the free disposition of the fruits of his labor, social progress would be ceaseless, uninterrupted, and unfailing. But there is also another tendency that is common among people. When they can, they wish to live and prosper at the expense of others. Bailout, anyone? Welfare, anyone? This is no rash accusation, nor does it come from a gloomy and uncharitable spirit. The annals of history bear witness to the truth of it. The incessant wars, mass migrations, religious persecutions, universal slavery, dishonesty in commerce, and monopolies. Again, this was written before 1850, and we have the same situation today in 2008. This fatal desire has its origin in the very nature of man, in that primitive, universal, and insuppressible instinct that impels him to satisfy his desires with the least possible pain. Property and plunder. Man can live and satisfy his wants only by ceaseless labor, by the ceaseless application of his faculties to natural resources. This process is the origin of property. So he's saying through labor, through work, through whether you're building or creating something or you're performing some kind of service, this is how you acquire property. But it is also true that a man may live and satisfy his wants by seizing and consuming the products of the labor of others. This process is the origin of plunder. So he's describing what the government does and what these charitable welfare programs do and monopolies and all the other things that are designed to enslave us. He's calling that plunder. Now, since man is naturally inclined to avoid pain, and since labor is pain in itself, it follows that men will resort to plunder whenever plunder is easier than work. History shows this quite clearly. And under these conditions, neither religion nor morality can stop it. So, no matter how much one professes to be of a particular religious conviction, their religion can be corrupted by their desire for plunder and to avoid work. Interesting. Interesting. And I agree with that. Now, no morality. So he's even saying that religion can be devoid of morality. What the heck are you worshiping if you have no morals? You'd have to be worshiping the devil himself. Is it any wonder that these people practice satanic worship, that they do satanic rituals, that they sacrifice babies, which I brought up at the beginning of the show? You see, it makes sense now, doesn't it? When, then, does plunder stop? It stops when it becomes more painful and more dangerous than labor. I think he underestimated that, because these days there are people being killed for the plunder all over the planet. It is evident, then, that the proper purpose of law is to use the power of its collective force to stop this fatal tendency to plunder instead of to work. Well, actually, what they're doing in the legal system is they're plundering, or they're working at figuring out more ways to plunder. That's about all the work they're doing there. Or ways to try to hide it. All the measures of the law should protect property and punish plunder. But generally, the law is made by one man or one class of men, and since law cannot operate without the sanction and support of a dominating force, this force must be entrusted to those who make the laws. This fact, combined with the fatal tendency that exists in the heart of man to satisfy his wants with the least possible effort, explains the almost universal perversion of the law. Thus, it is easy to understand how law, instead of checking injustice, becomes the invincible weapon of injustice. It is easy to understand why the law is used by the legislator to destroy in varying degrees among the rest of the people their personal independence by slavery, their freedom by oppression, and their property by plunder. This is done for the benefit of the person who makes the law and in proportion to the power that he holds. So he's talking about presidents, vice presidents, secretaries of state, secretaries of defense, secretaries of intelligence agencies, and all the departments underneath, including Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Health and Human Services, on and on and on and on and on. Pretty much they're just giving themselves blanket protection. They're even protecting the businesses out there that could kill you with untested drugs that they're trying to require you to take. Again, it's upholding the statement that Bastiat is making. Victims of lawful plunder. Men naturally rebel against the injustice of which they are victims. Thus, when plunder is organized by law for the profit of those who make the law, all the plundered classes try somehow to enter, by peaceful or revolutionary means, into the making of laws. According to their degree of enlightenment, these plundered classes may propose one of two entirely different purposes when they attempt to attain political power. Either they may wish to stop lawful plunder, or they may wish to share in it. I don't know about you, I feel it's time to stop it. And I said that last weekend, again on Friday night, go back and listen to the archives of that show. We talked about independence, and we talked about the massive theft going on, and everybody turning the other way, especially the media. Listen to this next sentence. Woe to the nation when this latter purpose prevails among the mass victims of lawful plunder, when they in turn seize the power to make laws. Until that happens, the few practice lawful plunder upon the many, a common practice where the right to participate in the making of law is limited to a few persons. But then, participation in the making of law becomes universal. And then, men seek to balance their conflicting interests by universal plunder. Instead of rooting out the injustices found in society, they make these injustices general. As soon as the plundered classes gain political power, they establish a system of reprisals against other classes. They do not abolish legal plunder. This objective would demand more enlightenment than they possess. Instead, they emulate their evil predecessors by participating in this legal plunder, even though it is against their own interests. It is as if it were necessary before a reign of justice appears for everyone to suffer a cruel retribution, some for their evilness and some for their lack of understanding. Now, to me, I could interpret that last passage as God's judgment. Now, for some, that's a bit too heavy because you have atheists. There are probably some atheists listening to this show that are saying, well, I don't believe God's going to judge the people. Then you've got some Christians that either believe God's going to judge the people or God's not going to judge the people. In fact, God's going to come and he's just going to lift everybody up into space, or a certain number of people that go to a certain church led by a certain pastor. It's very interesting how people have this figured out, that they don't have to do anything at all. Through all of this stuff, there's going to come a point where somebody's just going to pick them up and take them out of here. They don't have to answer to anything. The result of legal plunder is the next section here now. And there's no way we're going to be able to cover this whole thing, but this should stir up, because he gets right to the point in the beginning of this. Should stir up your emotions and your creativity enough to where you're going to face your responsibility in allowing this to happen. All of us must face that. It is impossible to introduce into society a greater change and a greater evil than this. The conversion of the law into an instrument of plunder. What are the consequences of such a perversion? It would require volumes to describe them all, thus we must content ourselves with pointing out the most striking. In the first place, it erases from everyone's conscience the distinction between justice and injustice. No society can exist unless the laws are respected to a certain degree. The safest way to make laws respected is to make them respectable. When law and morality contradict each other, the citizen has the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or losing his respect for the law. These two evils are of equal consequence, and it would be difficult for a person to choose between them. The nature of law is to maintain justice. This is so much the case that in the minds of the people, law and justice are one and the same thing. There is in all of us a strong disposition to believe that anything lawful is also legitimate. This belief is so widespread that many persons have erroneously held that things are just because law makes them so. Thus, in order to make plunder appear just and sacred to many consciences, it is only necessary for the law to decree and sanction it. Slavery, restrictions, and monopoly find defenders not only among those who profit from them, but also among those who suffer from them. The fate of nonconformists. If you suggest a doubt as to the morality of these institutions. It is boldly said that you are a dangerous innovator, a utopian, a theorist. And these days they say conspiracy theorist, a subversive. You would shatter the foundation upon which society rests. If you lecture upon morality or upon political science, there will be found official organizations petitioning the government in this vein of thought, that science no longer be taught exclusively from the point of view of free trade, of freedom, of property, and of justice, as has been the case until now, but also in the future. Science is to be especially taught from the viewpoint of the facts and laws that regulate industry. In this case, he was referring to French industry, but we could apply this to American industry. Facts and laws which are contrary to freedom, to property, and to justice. That in government-endowed teaching positions, the professor rigorously refrained from endangering in the slightest degree the respect due to the laws now in force. Well, you've got people in the law, or in relation to the laws in force, people teaching Marxism, communism, which are not the principles on which this nation was founded. And in fact, Barack Obama was charged and accused of that by Sean Hannity on that show on CNN last night, or CNN, Fox News last night. General Council of Manufacturers, Agriculture, and Commerce, May 6, 1850. Thus, if there exists a law which sanctions slavery or monopoly, oppression or robbery in any form whatever, it must not even be mentioned. For how can it be mentioned without damaging the respect which it inspires? Still further, morality and political economy must be taught from the point of view of this law, from the supposition that it must be a just law merely because it is a law. Another effect of this tragic perversion of the law is that it gives an exaggerated importance to political passions and conflicts and to politics in general. I could prove this assertion in a thousand ways, but by way of illustration, I shall limit myself to a subject that has lately occupied the minds of everyone. Universal suffrage. Well, now, for those of you unaware of what suffrage is, talking about voting all over the place in every possible way. Who shall judge? The followers of Rousseau's school of thought, who consider themselves far advanced, but whom I consider 20 centuries behind the times, will not agree with me on this, but universal suffrage, using the word in its strictest sense, is not one of those sacred dogmas which it is a crime to examine or doubt. In fact, serious objections may be made to universal suffrage. In the first place, the word universal conceals a gross fallacy. For example, there are 36 million people in France. Thus, to make the right of suffrage universal, there should be 36 million voters. But the most extended system permits only 9 million people to vote. 3 persons out of 4 are excluded, and more than this, they are excluded by the fourth. This fourth person advances the principle of incapacity as his reason for excluding the others. Universal suffrage means, then, universal suffrage for those who are capable. But there remains this question of fact. Who is capable? Are minors, females, insane persons, and persons who have committed certain major crimes the only ones to be determined incapable? The reason why voting is restricted. A closer examination of the subject shows us the motive which causes the right of suffrage to be based upon the supposition of incapacity. The motive is that the elector or voter does not exercise this right for himself alone, but for everybody. The most extended elective system and the most restricted elective system are alike in this respect. They differ only in respect to what constitutes incapacity. It is not a difference of principle, but merely a difference of degree. If, as the Republicans of our present-day Greek and Roman schools of thought pretend, the right of suffrage arrives with one's birth, it would be an injustice for adults to prevent women and children from voting. Why are they prevented? Because they are presumed to be incapable. Why is incapacity a motive for exclusion? Because it is not the voter alone who suffers the consequences of his vote, because each vote touches and affects everyone in the entire community, because the people in the community have a right to demand some safeguards concerning the acts upon which their welfare and existence depend. Now, in the final moments here, and I'm going to come back to this the next opportunity I have very soon. I'm going to come back to this work by Bastiat, which is called The Law. And here, what I like about it is, in much the way I argue a point, he's doing the same thing. He's creating analogies, and he's really paying attention to the principles and the details behind our God-given rights, our sovereignty, and how it applies, and how just because a man is making a law that he intends to usurp or supersede one of God's laws does not make it legal to do that. This is how they have perverted our constitution and our religions, whatever your personal religion might be. I'm not going to make judgments about people in that respect. However, if you are sacrificing babies and abducting children to satisfy what the precepts of your religion, then I do have an issue with that. The whole purpose is not about murdering. If you're going to give somebody up, give yourself up. But no, you have to go after babies and little children. So that said, I'm sure anyone that's thinking now about empowerment and thinking about what's being done to us, in light of this document that was written no later than 1850, that's over 150 years ago. Almost 160 years ago. Pretty amazing that Bastiat could be that right on about all of this. And it's exactly the problems that we have today. He's describing it to the T, as if this was biblical prophecy. And he talks about responsibility, and he talks about individuality. Indivisibility, meaning unable to be divided. You are a whole being. We are all whole creatures under God. We were created to be whole creatures. And we have a soul. And there's an aspect of what we have and what we're up against where we have the advantage. Before I close, I want to mention a poll that they put on CNN tonight. And the poll said one-third of all Americans are worried that they're going to lose their job. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because polling was the very first method of mind control that they created at the Tavistock Institute in London, which used to be the Wellington House, okay? Sigmund Freud was doing a lot of the work for them. Freud's nephew took up the reins of that work when Freud retired. Working in England at Tavistock Institute. Now, let's repeat that statement that I quoted. This was a poll. It said poll, colon, and then it said one-third of all Americans are worried they're going to lose their job. Now, there are some lies in that poll, and let's look at it. Well, let's just use our discernment. This is what I'm trying to encourage the listening audience to do. This is not rocket science. It's pretty simple. One-third of all Americans. How can you make that determination unless you have talked to all Americans? You can't say, well, we talked to one-third. You have to count all Americans. First of all, you've got people coming over the borders by the thousands every hour, sneaking over the border. All times of day, day and night, doesn't matter what time it is. So you can never keep tabs on everybody there is in the country. But you know, they're making a general statement, so let's just look at it in a general way. To make the determination that, and let's just say there's 300 million people in America. Now, they made a determination that one-third of all those people are worried they're going to lose their job. They would have had to talk to 100 million people. Now, when did this happen? When? Use your thinking cap. You know, my teachers used to say, put on your thinking caps. Okay? Put on your thinking cap and ask yourself, when did they talk to me? When did they ask me that question? Who do I know that was asked that question? Were my neighbors asked that question? Anybody I work with? Anybody I saw in the store? Anybody I saw at the football game, basketball game, baseball game, track meet, cross-country meet, soccer match, bowling alley? Anywhere I went, did I talk to one single person that was polled and asked if he was worried about whether or not he was going to lose their job? And they're coming up with this statistic telling you one-third of all Americans is what it said. So they're talking to the people that don't work, and they're talking to the people that retire, too. This is the point I'm making, is the spin and the mind control, the propaganda. That's all it is propaganda. It's nothing to pay attention to, but they're putting it out there. Why am I talking about it? Because it's given to you to control your thinking processes and to make you apathetic. Well, how do I feel about that? I guess I'm worried about losing my job too. If 100 million people, yet did they count 100 million people? Who did that poll? They just said poll. Doesn't say, even say when. Doesn't, you're led to believe that this poll just came out. It could have been 150 or 160 years ago when Bastiat did this article. That's the point I'm trying to make, is we take so many things for granted. That's how brainwashing works. That's how mind control works. I saw this just tonight on CNN, and I was outraged. One-third of all Americans are worried that they're going to lose their job. So not only are they worried, or they're worried that they're going to lose their job. Do one-third of all Americans have a job? That's another question. It doesn't sound like it. They say, oh, employment's up 4%, or employment's down 4%. From what? Most of the people I know don't have work. Probably you, the same thing. Well, it's been an interesting show, and I know I'll continue this topic. I hope you learned something. I hope I inspired you to at least think a little bit and develop, if only momentarily, some feelings about this for the purpose of empowerment, for empowering yourself, for arriving at some decision about what you're going to do. Because, as has been mentioned on other shows, it's time to face God, repent, and trust that God will lead you and me and us to the proper place. Until we do that, and I'm speaking about talking to God, repenting, we will be in error, in a sense. We will not get to where we're going, and you're likely going to be at what they call the proverbial short end of the stick when things start getting heavy. We can transcend all of this. We can go beyond this immensely. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with attorney Carl Pearson from New York. And we're going to be talking about this concept of the local attorney general and also the concept of his MyClads website and his LawMall website, the rights of people on a local level and a state level and ultimately a national level. We can recreate the business world for ourselves and make ourselves prosperous. Above all, you and your family's lives come first. If everyone in our country is taking care of our families, our country will do well. We can't rely on politicians who have lied. And if this document I just read to you, which is, again, almost 160 years old, if that hasn't awakened you, I don't know what will. It applies today just as much as it did back then. So join me tomorrow night. We got Carl Pearson on, Michael Herzog on Wednesday, Ken Adachi Thursday, and Jim Murray on Friday. In the meantime, special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and you, my listening audience, for tuning in and for your emails. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.